Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, good morning. This is Doug Field, the CEO of the Institute for Healthcare Consumerism, and welcome to this week's edition of Healthcare Consumerism Radio. We're glad to have you with us today, and joining me today is our radio producer, Jonathan Field. Jonathan, good morning.
Good morning.
We got a great lineup today, good program today, and a lot to talk about on this spring day in Atlanta, correct?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, let me give you an overview of our guests that are coming up, and then we have a lot of stuff to talk about in between time. We've got a return guest coming on in our first segment, Brian Ritter, who's VP of Exchange Sales with WEX Health, formerly Evolution One. And Brian was with Benaissance that was acquired by Evolution One. I think he's going to talk really about two things. He's going to talk about, where WEX Health has evolved within the WEX organization, from the acquisition of Evolution One and then the subsequent acquisition of Benaissance. So we'll hear a little bit on that and the new brand, WEX Health. And then we'll talk about what's really important in the exchange environments, and that is the back end, the importance of consolidated billing and administration. And, Benaissance is one of the experts in that space. So it'll be interesting discussion there with Brian. And then joining us in the second segment, to give us really an inside look at policy and regulations, as well as, where defined contribution is with healthcare consumerism, is Joel White, the president of the Council of Affordable Health Coverage. And Joel brings not only his work that they're doing with the council around, spurring competition and helping employers lower the cost, but he brings a long arm of experience around policy and actually working on the Hill. So it should be an interesting discussion.
Yeah, absolutely should. And, we look forward to both those guests on the show and talking to them a little bit later. Brian starting in just about 8 minutes now. Before we get too far into this morning's show, we'd like to take a minute and thank Aflac for their support for Healthcare Consumerism Radio and the 2016 IAC Forum and Expo this May in Atlanta. If you'll be attending Forum this year, you can join Aflac in session 103 on Wednesday, May 24. For a discussion on elevating the value of voluntary benefits as essential benefits. And you can register now at theiccforum.com. We do have early bird rates that end at midnight tonight. And while you're registering, be sure to select session 103 for your track one workshop option.
Yeah, and we certainly hope you can make it to Atlanta and join us in Atlanta. I think you'd find not only this session incredibly valuable with where Aflac is trying to educate the market on where voluntary are now as an essential benefits. But this is just the first step in one that of an ongoing thought leadership series that Aflac will be doing with us that will continue through May and June here on Healthcare Consumerism Radio on the changing landscape of voluntary benefits and what employers and brokers need to know about these changes. In fact, according to the Aflac Workforce report, employees that are enrolled in voluntary benefits are both more satisfied with their overall benefit packages and with their place of employment. Employers and the brokers that support them can rethink their voluntary benefit strategy in context of today's environment and be better equipped to succeed in the future. In today's consumerism and consumer-driven landscape, more and more employees are moved to high-deductible plans, often leaving employees on the hook for unexpected medical costs. However, as we talk about often on this program, healthcare consumers is not just about cost shift. It's about developing plans of choice and enabling the employees and their families, and all families are different, to really build plans that fit their family needs. And I think that's the essential part that voluntary benefits have to play. So we hope you can join us in Atlanta, and we hope you can follow us here on Healthcare Consumers and Radio as Aflac, conducts this thought leadership series over the next couple months.
Yeah, absolutely. The landscape for voluntary is definitely changing today. And, be sure to, stay tuned to future episodes of Healthcare Consumerism Radio. We will have experts from Aflac on several programs talking about how voluntary benefits are changing into, essential workplace benefits today. And, you know, remember, today is the deadline for early bird rates for IAC Forum and Expo. And while you are registering, check out session 103 for your track one workshop.
Yeah, and Jonathan, our early bird rates are going to be open until midnight tonight. Is that correct?
Yep. It's the final day. You know, we will have an email reminder going out shortly to all of those, who are on our email list here. And we're already seeing some great movement this morning from employers and brokers jumping on the last day for early bird rates.
Yeah, and for those of you out there listening to this program, and again, Jonathan reminded you that www.thehiaccforum.com. We've got a quality group of speakers. We've got, Jonathan, what, over 100 speakers, right, for this event?
It must be. I haven't counted it yet, but, you know, we have 32 different workshop tracks. And most of those have about 3 to 4 to 5 speakers on each panel. So, you know, we have everyone from, top employers, Rollins, Chick-fil-A, Centers for Disease Control, all the HR decision makers from employers on that level here in Atlanta to, of course, legal experts like John Hickman at Alston & Byrd and, tech innovators like Maxwell Health, CrowdMed, Health Expense, really runs the gamut of who's really driving change today in employer-sponsored health and benefits.
Yeah, and to add to that too, I mean, it covers the spectrum. We've got a quality group of health plans that are speaking and giving their thought leadership on where they're moving the needle and what they see going. You know, we're talking about direct primary care. We've got a great workshop panel, led by the Direct Primary Care Journal that is quality providers talking about what they're doing and where their practice is going and what that value proposition is to employers. And this isn't just about Atlanta employers. We've got quality employers coming in from across the country, both speaking and attending this event. Midwest Business Group on Health is really partnering with us in a big way, not just to bring their thought leadership and their membership around off-site clinics and around their employer perspective. And big, big footprint on wellness. Not only is Atlanta wellness professionals working with us, quality employers, but a depth of other wellness, not only providers, but brokers and employers participating with us, from the wearables players to quality companies like Interactive Health is one of the leaders in employee health management. And we'll be touching on, I think your email said it this week, Jonathan, communicating the value of mindfulness and where mindfulness is emerging as a very real part of total well-being.
Yeah, absolutely. Every track has at least one option for those looking for wellness content. And I think, maybe the most valuable aspect of the program in regards to wellness is that following our opening general session, where you will hear from the employers that we mentioned, we're going to have an open Q&A with those employers.
Yep.
So that's really an opportunity for, if you're an employer out there to hear directly just to talk with your peers. And, we have everyone from Racetrack Petroleum to Chick-fil-A, like we said, and it's going to be an open formatted session, hour long, bring your questions. A lot of debate regarding, what works and what doesn't, what fits certain cultures and certain workforces regarding wellness programs. This is your opportunity to, really ask your peers and find out what's working.
Yep. Well, I think we got, about a minute, Jonathan, until our first guest comes in? I think we got about a minute before our first guest comes in. Is that correct, Jonathan?
We are ready to go live now with our first guest.
Oh, great. Well, it's good to bring back a returning guest to the program. Glad to have him back with us, Bryant Ritter, who's a VP Exchange Sales for WexHealth. Brian, welcome back.
Well, good morning, guys. How are you doing?
We're doing great. You coming to us from Nebraska?
Absolutely, yeah, Omaha, Nebraska. So spring has sprung, the flowers are blooming, and it's a good day here in Nebraska.
That's great. Well, Brian, we got a lot to talk about here in this segment and a limited amount of time, so I want to kind of kick off and give us a, you know, you were part of Benaissance, it was acquired by Evolution One, now, you know, and WEX acquired Evolution One, I think, what, about 18 months, 24 months ago, and now we got a brand, a new brand around this called WEX Health. So talk to, give us a little update around all of that and the reasoning behind it and where this is going.
Yeah, absolutely. So the last time that I had a chance to visit with you, I was with Benaissance, and the desk did not change, the role did not change, but affiliation of company names have certainly evolved. I'm really, really excited about it. Evolution One, which you mentioned, was acquired by WEX, and WEX, founded in 1983, is a leading card platform and payment transaction platform that initially was focused on fuel and fleet management. In the last few years, as they've diversified, they've chosen, and I believe chosen wisely, to get in the healthcare space. And so they purchased Evolution One in July of 2014. And Benaissance was a long-term, long-time industry partner with Evolution One. We often called upon many of the same clients, but we sold different products. Evolution One, account-based, consumer-driven accounts, FSAs, HRAs, HSAs, and, of course, Benaissance in their premium billing and payment collection side. So we've worked alongside them in the marketplace for many, many years, and through their new relationship with WEX, they decided they wanted to become bigger and better. We welcome that opportunity to become bigger and better, and so now we're part of the WEX family working with Evolution One. Yeah, the other great thing is we just had our annual partner conference earlier this month in April down in Scottsdale, and we had over 500 participants there, where in fact we rebranded the entire operation from being Evolution One, and now it's WEX Health. So new story, new brand, but some exciting new information to build upon.
So what are the, what's the partner's reception to that, both your customer base that's now under the WEX Health and both, what, you know, Evolution One's now WEX Health partners, what's been the reception to this new brand and new initiative?
Candidly, it was, why didn't you guys do this sooner? It's actually been very, 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 very warm, the reception that this news got. The partners oftentimes were using both of our native platforms in serving their business, and they see now that here is the opportunity for them to get even more services from providers that they trust. So very, very exciting. They're also interested in seeing how we might be able to leverage and integrate our solutions to bring some real neat solutions to the marketplace, one of which I hope to share with you in a little bit.
Yeah, let's talk about that now, because I think, you know, the work that you are doing at WEX Health, and specifically around, you know, where you come from around consolidated billing and back-end administration, I think is incredibly important. And, you know, Brian, you know, you've done a great job speaking at our events. We've had great discussions in those share sessions. But, you know, talk a little bit about not just what you're doing, but the importance of the back-end in an exchange environment.
Yeah, well, thanks for that question. That back end sometimes is the forgotten end. It's the not the sexy end, but it is a great way for both the exchange experience for that consumer or that employer to receive all the benefits for which they are paying onto one easy and consolidated bill. So they can receive it, it's accurate, they can make that one payment, and that payment goes to proper destinations, be it carriers or other providers. And it really is just the embodiment of consumerism. You know, that consumerism has that first major step, that I as an individual am important, that I as an individual can have greater access to greater offerings, and that I as an individual can be facilitating that process with the greatest of ease. So if we're able to put that all those products onto one bill for that individual consumer or that employer, and then make them enabled to make a payment, and we take care of the back end, it really, really goes quite well. Now, for the exchange, boy, that message out to that that individual or that employer on that monthly basis reminds that individual employer that that exchange is a real, real key advocate in their ongoing interaction with health. And, you know, it's really funny because we've been doing this for a long time as Benaissance, but the long-term tagline of Evolution One and now WEX Health really, really comes home, and that is simplifying the business of healthcare. And that's what we do.
Yeah, it's so important. I mean, I think we can all talk about on the front side of creating plans of choice. I mean, that sounds really good, and it is where we need to be going. But if you can't, from an employer's perspective and a consumer's perspective, you know, turn that into single billing and clear ways to administer that, then there's a lot of confusion and a lot of challenges, correct? You know, that
there
you're
sure
pointing
is.
Out. Yeah.
There
talk
sure
a little
is.
Bit so, about talk about what you mean by pre-reconciled invoices. What do you mean by that?
Well, interesting term that I guess perhaps we coined through talking to a number of health plans of the insurance carriers. Now, this may not be true with the largest five or six health plans, but as we're talking to employers and to health plans, you know, there is this iterative dance that goes on between the health plan that is sending out an invoice to the employer, and the employer attempts to receive it and say, my gosh, I'm supposed to pay this as billed, and yet the census information I'm being presented by my insurance carrier does not really reflect my census here presently working at my organization because there's been changes. So in talking to those carriers, we were floored to learn that as they produce those invoices, they know that oftentimes they are very similar to the phone books, that as they're being printed, not even distributed, but as they're being printed, they are out of touch with the actual census. And so they just kind of go along with this existence of this multi-iterative process between employer and health plan to figure out who's on first, what's on second. So pre-reconciled. What we do, because we're doing the consolidated billing based upon the enrollment system, we're taking an up-to-minute snapshot of that employer's census. So by pre-reconciled, we're taking the very much latest and greatest down to a minute-based moment to send out that invoice on behalf of the exchange through the employer census. So it really gives a great, clean starting point for the employer to go through their bill and to see what changes might need to be made. And that's where we wrap around that concept that we've coined as review and repair. We're going to push out that invoice. It's pre-reconciled, and we're going to poke the employer the first time. We're going to give them opportunity to review that invoice. They can make changes, and then we're going to send them a final bill perhaps several days later, whatever that carrier or that platform wants to support, several days later, such that they can pay with as much reconciliation process having taken place to ensure maximum accuracy and least amount of post-payment reconciliation as possible.
Hey, Brian, when you talk about review and repair, is that only for fully insured? Is that also applicable to self-funded plans?
You know, it applies really to both because obviously in the self-insured model, most of the large employers are working with some sort of a TPA that is charging them on a per-member, per-month basis for either supplying them a network or doing claims processing. So that TPA or the insurance carrier certainly knows who they are supposed to be covering from that time period, either real-time at the point of sale for services such as prescriptions or on a post-service basis such as claims processing. So that this concept of accurate census, accurate billing, and review and repair really does extend to both populations.
Let me ask you, I want to talk about your retirement premium billing in a minute, but first I want to ask you a question about, you know, the exchange environment, because you're front and center with that. And, you know, we're still in the early days, as we all know. Some people say we're still really at the beginning, and technology is maturing. Do you see the exchanges embracing the need to have this important back end? Where do you see their mindset and what they're trying to do?
a fair question. What we see is the answer is yes. We see there's continued interest and continued commitment to move to embracing a full exchange experience for the individuals as well as the employers. Certainly, it may not be happening as quickly as we, as an evangelical missionary out talking about consolidated daily billing, would like to see. But we are seeing great traction in it. We realize it's going to be more of a marathon as opposed to a sprint. But ultimately, as we get down to the key concepts of consumerism, so if we step back and look at those small step-by-steps, if we some days get frustrated, we look back at that meta concept where individuals are more responsible for their health care, they have greater choice. We see that the small actions taken each and every day are really just the creation of an ongoing, growing movement to embrace these elements that make those exchanges far successful. So we're seeing traction in different pockets. You mentioned the retiree space. We see it's really a great cutting edge application of what we can do. May I share with you what we're doing there?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd like to hear about that because I think a lot of movement around retiree to let employers to look at the retiree benefit population and how they change that up. And I think exchanges are a definite alternative there. But yeah, talk to us about what you're doing there.
So this is a great manifestation of what WEX Health, combining native Evolution One and Benaissance underneath the brand of WEX Health is doing. I believe it was last year that one of the leading benefit consulting firms announced a study in which they looked at employers and effectively said about one-third of employers who had retiree populations that they were serving were already on some form of a private exchange. And yet another 60% saw private exchange as being a part of their long-term future. Now, in that today, retirees on these exchanges getting their benefits, it's a great transition because they're able to save money, both the employer but also the individual retiree, but in many cases is not exactly user-friendly yet on the back-end side. What do I mean by that? Well, today, if that retiree signs up for a couple different products, and let's just say it's a medical supplement and a dental, they're going to get multiple bills from each carrier. They're going to write out that check for each bill. They're going to mail it each carrier. They have to make some a photocopy of it to send that in subsequently to their employer or their employer's administrator to get that reimbursement check from their health reimbursement account. And then retiree is waiting for that check to come in, and they're waiting for that check to come in, and finally they get paid. So it's a process that is not different than what most folks have incurred previously, but it's not necessarily clean, especially for this segment. So how we bring in solutions from WEX Health, we're doing a couple things. Because Evolution One historically had consumer-driven health leadership in terms of HRAs, HSAs, FSAs, and Benaissance has that consolidated billing and payment collection, here's how we're tying that together. One, retiree through their exchange gets one bill, not two. Instead of that retiree having to write out all these checks and then wait for reimbursement, we are making it easier. We're taking that amount that they owe, we're netting it against the HRA that is in our platform. We are then, if the individual does have any remaining balance, we're sending one invoice for them. They're making one net payment, not waiting for any reimbursement, and then we'll take those funds and then send them on to their ultimate destination. So in essence, we have cut quite a bit of the cycle out of the process for the retiree. We've cut out a lot of the noise, but most importantly, we're not having that retiree write a check for money and then wait for their reimbursement to come in. That's a huge, huge game changer, and we're thinking that in early adoption, what we're seeing will certainly become perhaps a de facto model of serving this population.
That's good stuff, Brian. Well, Brian, we've got about we've got a couple minutes to go here, and I always like to leave you with an opportunity to kind of close out this segment and leave our audience with some takeaways and how they can reach out to you.
Well, absolutely. Thank you. Well, the biggest takeaway is please remember our brand, WEX Health. Anytime you change your brand, there's always a lot of education, and we're going to have to message that quite a bit. So WEX Health is a home that you would find natively, Evolution One and Benison Solutions, although candidly those names have gone away, and we are WEX Health. The other thing is really if anyone out in your audience, whether it's the employer or the exchange or a carrier, is looking for solutions that can really leverage their interest in consumer-driven health accounts as well as consolidated billing and payment collection, please give us a call. And they can certainly find us at WEXHealthInc.com or just Google WEX Health and they'll find it. And if they have an edge case that they're concerned about, they're wondering, hey, we have a need to solve, and it involves, again, billing and accounts, give us a call, and we're happy to tackle that issue and see together how we can solution to meet that that need in the marketplace. Hey, Doug, thanks so much for having me on. We're going to be there in Atlanta in just about 4 weeks, so happy to see you guys there, and we appreciate the ability to share our story with you.
Great. Great to have you with us as always, Brian. I look forward to seeing you. And just under 30 days now in Atlanta. It's coming up on us quick. So enjoy the springtime out there in Nebraska this weekend, and we'll see you soon. And I appreciate you joining us.
Take care.
Jonathan, good stuff there. You know, I think a very important part, the back end of exchanges and the importance of this consolidated billing and premium billing, et cetera.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's clear that the joined forces of, you know, formerly Evolution One and Benaissance are up to some really exciting innovation at WEX Health. And of course, if, as Brian mentioned, the WEX Health team will be with us at Forman Expo in Atlanta. And you can actually catch Jason Cook. Jason is the Vice President of Healthcare Emerging Market Sales at WEX Health. And he has a quite deep background in the HSA business and consumer-driven healthcare. So he will be talking about the next generation of HSAs. So, yeah, be sure to catch that if you're going to be at the event next month.
Yeah. And I want to take a minute before our next guest comes on to talk about something that we're doing very important next Tuesday, actually. It's a free webinar. You know, we talk about all these different emerging segments are important. I mean, one area is the and Brian was just talking about exchanges. I mean, let's call the benefit marketplace in this case. But what is the value to brokers really embracing a benefit marketplace? So we're conducting a webinar along with 8th Senate and Insurance Marketing Center out of the Mid-Atlantic. Really geared to help educate brokers on where are we moving with this trend around benefit marketplaces,
right?
Where are their clients and their clients' employees moving and embracing technology. And we're providing brokers that attend this webinar a chance to learn firsthand from somebody that was a very early adopter, Rob Poley and Insurance Marketing Center, you know, put a benefit marketplace in place in 2011 for 2012 plan year. That is very early. And
right.
Brokers that attend this webinar are going to be able to understand, you know, where has Rob and their team created success? Where have they had some missteps that now he can help you avoid? And what should you look at when deciding what benefit marketplace platform you should, you know, you should embrace?
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with everything you said there. And, you know, if you're interested in joining the webinar Tuesday morning, it's May 3rd at 11 a.m. Eastern, just go to our website, theicc.com. You will both see a tile on the homepage right there with the 8Centive logo. You can click that or go to the events tab on the nav bar and just kind of scroll down there. You'll see our webinar section. You can register for the live webinar on Tuesday morning, or we also have archived webinars there.
Yeah, and for all our brokers listening on this segment right now or listening to us, you know, before Tuesday, if you go to the forum site too, you're also going to see a promotion that if you attend this webinar, you qualify to come to IHC Forum on a VIP pass, which is free attendance to IHC Forum in Atlanta. So, you know, take us up on that. We'd love to have you both. We'd love to have you join us on this webinar that we think you'll find very beneficial. And we'd love to, you know, have you and see you in Atlanta, which we think you'd find very valuable to what you're doing within your practice as a leading producer within your organization to better serve your clients and grow profitability of your practice.
Yeah, well said. And, you know, as we mentioned a few times already today, end of early bird, midnight tonight. So if you don't get around to registering today and you're a broker, an advisor out there, you know, sign up for the 8-Cent webinar on Tuesday. You have to attend. We have to see you on the attendee list. And after that, you will be given a special VIP discount code to get you access to everything at IHC Forum and Expo, completely free to you. And that, you know, since rates go up to our standard rates starting tomorrow morning, that's going to be a $495 value to you as a broker. And, you know, it looks like we are ready to transition to our second guest here.
Yeah, we're pretty excited to have our next guest on. I think he brings a very deep experience, not only what they're doing at the Council for Affordable Health Coverage, but his experience on the Hill and working in Washington and talking about policy and regulation. And joining us right now is Joel White, the president of the Council for Affordable Health Coverage. Joe, good morning.
Good morning. Great to be on.
Yeah, great to have you. Really appreciate you taking the time out of your schedule to join us. Give us a little bit of background and overview on what the council's doing, you know, what the council's mission is, and then specifically your background, too, before we move into some of these key talking points today.
Yeah, well, the council is actually going on our 15th anniversary this year. So we started in 2001 to enact an individual refundable advanceable tax credit to help people better afford their health coverage. If it sounds familiar, that's the key subsidy mechanism in the Affordable Care Act. And so in 2009, you know, we wouldn't have written the subsidy the way it was written into law, but in 2009, 2010, the council took a look at our original mission and decided that we were going to shift focus a little bit and really drill down into what's driving health cost trend, how can we empower consumers with some tools, and get some additional flexibility into the systems so that employers can make better choices in terms of the coverage they offer. So the council itself is a multi-stakeholder Washington, D.C.-based advocacy association. We're 25 members strong, mostly employers. About 40% of our members are employers. We do have healthcare payers. We've got providers. Mm-hmm. We've got patient groups. And we're very focused on one thing, and that's bringing down the cost of healthcare for all Americans. We yeah. think that'll do the most to promote affordability. So we're focused on a couple of campaigns, two big ones, one on transparency and another on wellness that we can get into. But all in all, what we do every day is what are the policies that Congress, the administration can enact that would lower health costs, make health coverage more affordable?
Yeah. So let's talk about that. I mean, talk a little bit more from your, you know, experience on how healthcare costs have impacted employers, individuals, and taxpayers recently.
Yeah, well, it's not good news, as you could probably guess. Let's just take at a very high level. About a year ago, we had a lot of people cheerleading about the slowdown in the rate of growth in healthcare. It was historic. It was the lowest rate of growth in history. And, of course, it was slower growth, yes, and historically slow growth, yes, but off a massive base. And that growth continued to outpace both the economy and wages. So what it meant for employers was that more of what they were paying out in benefits was more of what they were paying out in total compensation was going to benefits. And for an individual, they were paying more in health costs than their incomes were rising, so they were actually losing ground. What this means for an individual family, for example, for the typical family, in 2002, they paid about 17% of their income in health costs. Today, that number is 35%. In just 10 years, by 2030, that number is going to be 54% of a typical family's income. That's just not sustainable.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And so talk about federal policy that you're so involved with and how federal policy, you know, where you are up there, has impacted employer ability to continue to provide coverage. I mean, you're touching on some of it, but getting a little deeper on what you see.
Yeah, I mean, part of the reason these costs are going up, I'll switch the employer side here. Premiums for family coverage for employers increased about 27% over the last 5 years. That doesn't sound like a lot, but if you think of that in terms of workers' earnings, their earnings only went up 10%. So basically, an employer is spending more and more on health coverage. One of the reasons that is because of federal health policy, not in spite of it. So the Affordable Care Act, you know, mandated essential health benefits and mandated the actuarial values and community rating, et cetera. And those mandates have a cost, and it's increased the cost of providing coverage and doing business in a significant way. And so employers are struggling with those costs. They're struggling to report all the things they have to report under the law, all the things they've got to provide. Insurers, what we're seeing is because of the inflexibility in the Affordable Care Act, you know, they're trying to compete on price, but what that means is very high cost sharing to the point where, you know, we've taken a look zip code by zip code. You know, someone in Iowa can get an unsubsidized plan for about $500 a month, but it comes with a $10,000 deductible. Yeah. That's not affordable coverage, right?
Right.
So the law itself, because of the mandates and whatnot, is driving inaffordability. And so we think that could be changed, and it could be changed, you know, without repeal of the Affordable Care Act. It could be changed through pretty common sense ways.
So that's what Congress can do, some things to help lower the cost. Correct.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, it's gotten politicized. I think a lot of people are saying all or nothing, right? Repeal, replace, and you know, we get that. We just think politically with the president and the White House. I mean, this is called Obamacare after all, right?
Right.
He's not going to sign
right.
a repeal of the law. So
right.
So what we've been focused on are what are those kind of incremental policies that we can either repeal or change in the law that would address a problem or make things more affordable. And we've been successful over the past couple of years. We've gotten four laws that would repeal or modify the Affordable Care Act that we think address real problems that have been driving up health costs. I'll give you one example.
Yeah, please go ahead.
Yeah. So small employers in the small group market, there was a cap on a maximum cap on the deductible that they could offer in a plan. And for an employer, you know, if they're trying to offer a benefit, they can provide their workers and say provide 100% of the premium or 80%, 70% of the premium. Oftentimes, that means increasing the deductible a little bit. Well, because of the cap in the small group market, it was $2,000 for an individual policy, $4,000 for a family policy, that was really harming their ability to offer, continue to offer coverage to their workers. So John Boehner and Harry Reid, 8 months before the election, agreed that should be repealed. And so there are bipartisan compromises that we can get changes to the Affordable Care Act, even in election years, that would help employers and individuals better afford their coverage.
So I want to come back to transparency. We've got in wellness in a minute, but I want to ask you to get your perspective. So let's look ahead, and what's the council's position on, let's say that there's an opportunity to have, an administration and a Congress that is more pro-repeal and replace. What's the council's position on that? Is it let's try to fix what we have here versus tearing everything up? And what do you advocate for? What's your position on all that?
When the law originally came through, we were neutral on it. We had members who were in favor of it. We were members who were opposed to it.
Right.
Now I think we've got some experience, and in hindsight, you know, we've got plans pulling out. We've got very high premiums. We've got a very relatively sick risk pool. We've got folks who aren't buying coverage unless they have a subsidy. We have folks who, even if they have a subsidy, aren't signing up. You know, that's concerning. And so right now what we're saying is, considering the political polarization Let's see if we can incrementally make changes to make the markets work a little better. Now, if there is a tidal wave shift in the political environment in D.C. this November, in other words, we have a Republican in the White House, there's a Republican Senate, Republican House, I think it is a near certainty that the law will be repealed. Now, what goes in place of it is it gets really tricky, and that's what Speaker Ryan is working on right now with the committees of jurisdiction in the House, to put out a white paper this year and policies next year that would fundamentally change the markets. And we're working on that as well, and I think, you know, you can think everything from the smaller changes if a Democrat continues to be in the White House to big changes if a Republican's in the White House. On the big side, we really think that there ought to be tax policy that makes it neutral to an employer about whether they offer a defined benefit plan or a defined contribution plan. And we think that there ought to be some flexibility in that under the benefit mandates, that if you choose the defined contribution path, you don't have to meet all the maternity coverage and other essential health benefit requirements,
yep.
The preventive benefit, the actuarial values, et cetera. And if you're an individual, just because your employer gives you, let's say, $10,000 to go shop for a plan, you shouldn't lose the uniformity and the protections and the administrative simplification that comes from ERISA, that you could go out and buy a policy and ERISA would follow the person rather than stuck with the employer.
That makes it a lot of sense. So talk a little bit about, well, we got about 5 minutes left on this segment, and I want to get, you know, and I think transparency is incredibly important. I mean, most of us in this space, you probably agree, is that we can't have true healthcare consumers without true transparency. And I think wellness, we look at wellness and see that how it is not some soft thing. It's a very important part of productivity, performance, retention, year-round, really, you know, creating healthier employees and their families. So talk a little bit about what the council is doing with transparency and the wellness.
Yeah, a couple things on transparency. First of all, we need good information on health plan choices, right?
Mm-hmm.
The exchanges were supposed to be the marketplaces where consumers could use tools to help their decision-making process. Unfortunately, mm-hmm. What we see in the public exchanges, and we did a report card on this issue that rated the exchanges. You can find it at clearchoicescampaign.org. The report card basically found that the public exchanges were using technology that was basically available 10, 20 years ago, that there was massively advanced technology in the marketplace that allow people to sort plans by the issues they have, the problems they have, the diseases they have, the drugs they're taking, so that they can actually get a plan that best meets their needs. We're not using those in the public exchanges. We think that's wrong. That ought to be farmed out to the private sector, and we should keep some functions for the government, like eligibility verification, income mm-hmm. verification through the IRS. But right, we're actually leveraging the good technology in the creative marketplace so that people can get good tools to make good plan choices and decisions.
Right.
Research has shown when someone's aligned with a plan and it's a good fit, costs are about 30% less. So that's kind of first thing on the plan side. On the provider side, though, what we see in the marketplace is you know, hospital costs, physician costs vary substantially across settings for similar procedures, and there's very little information available to support consumer decision making. Now, there's emerging tools, but you know, federal policy more often than not hinders the use of those tools in making decisions rather than helps. And so what we're advocating for is that prices and quality measures, quality performance scores, be released to the public. If taxpayers are paying, for example, for Medicare and Medicaid, that information about that hospital or that physician ought to be made public. Now, it ought to be paired side by side with the quality measure because that's a good view of value. Right, cost and quality looks at value, but there's no reason with the amount of data that we have available at a very granular level that we wouldn't be able to empower entrepreneurs to create tools that allow consumers to have a good look at the relative cost of provider A versus provider B.
I mean, So you're working aggressively advocating to get some of these federal policy hurdles down to enable transparency to emerge and true transparency to emerge. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'll give you an example. So in Medicare today, you could go on the Medicare Compare website, and it's almost useless to a consumer to be able to make a comparison between Hospital A and Hospital B. It's a hard-to-use, clunky tool. The information on cost isn't available. Even if the cost were available, it's a Medicare DRG, or if you have the charge, it's not relevant to a consumer. No one pays a charge. No one pays that. The DRG is an administered pricing mechanism established by law. If I'm a private commercial market health consumer, or perhaps I'm uninsured, or perhaps I have a very high deductible, what I want to see is an average amount paid, and then compare that between this hospital and that hospital. In that way, I can make an informed decision. And so we've got legislation we expect to be introduced in the next month or so that would require hospitals to disclose that for the top 50 inpatient and outpatient DRGs and make those available to consumers on public-facing websites.
Okay. I see in the free market a lot of emerging decision support tools, and I'm not sure you're seeing the same thing, but I think that, I think the market will create these tools if we can get some of these policies in check to allow this. Now, do you work close with Leah at Leapfrog Group, too, on what she's doing around safety and transparency with hospitals?
Yeah, I was on a panel with her not too long ago, and she's great. She's doing fantastic work. That's a big deal, right? Like, safety in a hospital is a big, big deal.
It is.
And you want all-cause readmissions. You want mortality rates. You want them by surgical procedures, by disease type, because, if you've got a choice between Hospital A and Hospital B, and your mortality rate is 10% lower in Hospital B, you start choosing Hospital B, Hospital A is going to get better at their mortality rate. That's a virtuous cycle. We want to encourage that in the marketplace.
Yep, I agree with you. We got a couple minutes to go here. Give us kind of a quick overview of what you're doing around wellness, please.
On wellness, it's really interesting because there was a big fight during the Affordable Care Act over wellness, and there was, interestingly, a lot of disease groups here in Washington, D.C., those folks representing cancer and heart and diabetes and others, who were lining up against wellness incentives, saying that, their folks might be disadvantaged and unable to participate if because they're so sick, they wouldn't be able to maybe take advantage of the discounts. So the wellness incentives in the Affordable Care Act were limited strictly to the employer market. Now that we've had a couple years of experience there, I think some of the concerns that were raised by the advocates haven't been borne out. There's still some discrimination issues that I think are more on the labor side, but not on the health side. And so what we're looking at doing, and again, we're hopeful that a bill will be introduced in the next 2 months before the August recess, is legislation that would allow wellness discounts not just in the employer market but in the individual market. So right now, if I'm an individual, I'm buying coverage on the exchange or through a commercial insurer off the exchange or on a private exchange, I can't get that discount for participating in a wellness program the way I could if I work for an employer. It's illegal in the individual market. We want to make it legal in the individual market so that folks can get the 30 to 50% discount just as they would if they were working for an IBM or a Verizon.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, and particularly what you're talking about, defined contribution, and where you follow it, these individuals, go out and buy individual coverage, things like that. So, Joe, listen, it's been great having you on the program. I'd like to stay close with you and work with you again and maybe have you on the program, get you involved in some of our events. I think you've got a real important mission and message, to help us get, better cost control and cost savings for individuals as well as employers and the stakeholders in the space. And it's been a pleasure having you on. I want to give you a chance, a minute or so, to leave our audience with some final thoughts.
Yeah, I think just the things that we've talked about today could save in the marketplace anywhere between $100 to $200 billion annually. So if we start pursuing aggressively some of these policies and Congress hears our collective voices, We will do more to impact the market and advance consumerism in healthcare than we have in a very long time. And so the great work that you all are doing needs to be amplified. Folks who are listening to the podcast, what the folks are going to say down in Atlanta, we need to get revved up and energized about this and engaged in the political process so that our decision makers who are making these laws that oftentimes don't work for folks, make things more expensive and less affordable, we can start to change that dynamic and get on a better track in this country.
Yeah, I look forward to working with you more closely. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, so I would just invite folks to go to our websites, CAHC.net and clearchoicescampaign.org. We've got grassroots tools there. We've got lots of materials. Our contact information is there. We're looking forward to partnering with you all and looking forward to Atlanta as well.
Thanks, Joe. Appreciate you having on the program. We'll see you soon in Atlanta, and have a great weekend.
All right. Thanks. You too.
And to the rest of our audience, a final reminder, as Jonathan pointed out, that today is the final day for early bird rates, some big savings. We hope to see you in Atlanta. Go to www.theihccforum.com, and we look forward to having everyone on Healthcare Consumerism Radio next Friday. Have a good weekend.